Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 18, Text 32. The residents of Jamudvipa offer prayers. Jarayujan Sveda Jamada Job Didan Bidan. Jarayujan Sveda Jamada Job Didan. Chara charam devashi pitri bhutam maindriyam. Yakam kshiti saila sarit samudra. Yakam kshiti saila sarit samudra. Dvipa graha kshetya vidheya eka. Chara yujam svedayam andajot vidam. Chara charam deva shipi tributa maindriyam. Yakam kshiti shaila kasharit samudra. Dvipa graha kshetya vidheya eka. Chara yujam. One born from a womb. Svedajam, one born from perspiration. Andaja, one born from an egg. Udbidam, one born of the earth. Chara acharam, the moving and the stationary. Deva, the demigods. Rishi, the great sages. Pitri, the inhabitants of Pitri Loka. Bhutam, the material elements, air, fire, water, and earth. Aindriyam, all the senses. Dhyau, the higher planetary systems. Kham, the sky. Kshiti, the earthly planets. Shaila, the hills and mountains. Sarit, the rivers. Samudra, the oceans. Dvipa, the islands. Grahariksha, the stars and planets. Iti, thus. Abideya, to be variously named. Eka, one. Translation and purport. My dear Lord, you manifest your different energies in countless forms as living entities born from wombs, from eggs, and from perspiration, as plants and trees that grow out of the earth, as all living entities, both moving and standing, including the demigods, the learned sages, and the pitas, as outer space, as the higher planetary system containing the heavenly planets, and as the planet Earth with its hills, rivers, oceans, and islands. Indeed, all the stars and planets are simply manifestations of your different energies. But originally, you are one without a second. Therefore, there is nothing beyond you. This entire cosmic manifestation is therefore not false, but is simply a temporary manifestation of your inconceivable energy. Please repeat. My dear Lord, you manifest your different energies in countless forms. As living entities born from wombs, from eggs, and from perspiration. As plants and trees that grow out of the earth, as all living entities, both moving and standing, including the demigods, the learned sages, and the Pitas. As outer space, as the higher planetary system, containing the heavenly planets, and as the planet Earth, with its hills, rivers, seas, oceans, and islands. Indeed, all the stars and planets are simply manifestations of your different energies. But originally, you are one without a second. Therefore, there is nothing beyond you. This entire cosmic manifestation is therefore not false, but is simply a temporary manifestation of your inconceivable energy. Report. This verse completely rejects the theory of Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya, which states that spirit, or Brahman, is real, whereas the manifested material world, with its great variety of things, is false. Nothing is false. One thing may be permanent and another temporary, but both the permanent and the temporary are facts. For example, if someone becomes angry for a certain period, no one can say that this anger is false. It is simply temporary. Everything we experience in our daily lives is of the same character. It is temporary, but real. The different kinds of living entities coming from various sources are very clearly described in this verse. Some are born from a womb, and some, like certain insects, from human perspiration. Others hatch from eggs, and still others sprout from the earth. A living entity takes birth under different circumstances according to his past activities, karma. Although the body of the living entity is material, it is never false. No one will accept the argument that since a person's material body is false, murder has no repercussions. Our temporary bodies are given to us according to our karma, and we must remain in our given bodies to enjoy the pains and pleasures of life. Our bodies cannot be called false. They are only temporary. In other words, the energy of the Supreme Lord is as permanent as the Lord himself, although his energy is sometimes manifest and sometimes not. As summarized in the Vedas, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, everything is Brahman. Mam Vishadaya Krishna Vistaya Vitale Srimati Brahma Kanyana Swami Tidani Mam Vishadaya Krishna Vistaya Vitale Srimati Bhakti Danta Swami Tidani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauradhani Pachari Mam Vishasi Sumadhani Pasvachari Satyani Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Brahma Nityananda Srimadvaita Gadara Vasudevasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Now I have to admit, before I start this class, that this is a cooperative endeavor of Kanchanavali Mataji, Yadurani Mataji, and myself. Because when I read this verse and I realized I didn't have Vedabase because my laptop crashed, that without Vedabase I was not really capable of giving a proper class on this subject. So they helped. Kanchanavali had the whole day to sit on Vedabase. So I put some things in. So these are prayers spoken by the residents of Hiranmaya Varsha, and they worship Kurma. And you know, when I was reading this verse, and you read this whole description of the cosmic manifestation, I realized how incredibly complicated this is. At one point, a few years ago, for Kartik, I read all the Srimad Bhagavatam verses without purports. You can just make it. You know, it takes you about 2-3 hours a day if you're a good reader. But I realized, you know, there's different descriptions of the creation in Srimad Bhagavatam. It's like 3 or 4 different descriptions, and they're actually quite different. And I realized then that without Prabhupada's purports, it's quite incomprehensible. You know, you can read it and it's just kind of, you know, just even though I'd read the purports before, every now and then I had to go back to the purports to be able to comprehend it. So, you know, we have Prabhupada's purports. We have the explanation. So, you know, we need that. We need the mercy of the Lord to be able to understand this creation because it's His creation. So we need His mercy in able to understand this. And actually, I was discussing yesterday with Yadurani Mataji that this Krishna creates this whole incredibly complicated universe just for our benefit. It's only us who need it. He doesn't need it. We need this universe. Mm? So this whole universe is just there. So ultimately, you know, to facilitate us creating, us kind of regaining our relationship with Krishna again. Mm. How incredibly merciful is that? All this is just there so we can go back home, back to Godhead. Ultimately, we have to learn. And this is, we want to be here. So He gives us this. But, you know, it's just there for us. Mm. So, and once we establish our relationship with Krishna, then this whole illusion of this creation, it will disappear. So once we establish that relationship, then everything will become clear to us. Mm. It's like, you know, and without that, you know, you have all those complicated philosophies of people trying to understand this universe without having the benefit of, you know, a spiritual pure devotee to explain it to him, without having the benefit of the mercy of the Lord. And no, through the ages, everybody's always trying to understand this world that we're in. And I was just looking at dialectic spiritualism and all the different philosophies that are in there and the amazing things that people think just to try and understand this world. And without Krishna, they can't come up with anything sensible. In this purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya, spirit or Brahman is real, whereas the manifested world with its great varieties of things is false, which is in principle the Mayavadi idea. There is reality, Dravya, but it has no qualities, it's Nirguna. So everything around us is basically not real because we think it has qualities, because we perceive it as having qualities, and therefore it's not real. So Srila Prabhupada once said to a disciple, disciple told him, Prabhupada, this Mayavadi philosophy, I cannot understand it. And Srila Prabhupada said, well, that is very good, because if you could understand it, you would really be in trouble. So, yeah, I don't understand it either. So far, I'm not in trouble yet. The Buddhists are even worse. I mean, the Buddhists, they say that there is no reality, there is no dravya, but there are gunas. So that amounts to the fact that nothing has qualities. And then they can argue endlessly about what type of nothing has qualities. But nothing has qualities. I mean, if Mayavad philosophy goes over our head, then that completely loses me. And Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, verse 32, Canto 3, chapter 32, verse 28, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions, he gives this explanation that all that glitters is not gold. But it doesn't mean that an object that glitters is false. It might not be gold, but it's not false. Or like an oyster, it has this gold in you, and that's our perception. In our perception, we see that gold in you. So the gold in you is not there. There's no gold there. But it doesn't mean that the oyster is actually false. The oyster is still there. So now according to Mayavadis, they say that Krishna is like an ordinary human being, or, you know, it's like a material form. It's an ordinary human being. And, it's hard to understand Krishna's human-like form. You know, it's hard to understand who he really is. But it does not make Krishna an ordinary person. That does not make him false. You know, scriptures say, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Sachitananda Vigraha. And So we might have imperfect senses, we might not understand Krishna, but then with the help, we need the help of scripture and we need the help of the spiritual master, and then we can understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he has, he's eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. So with our material senses, the perception that we have, if you start speculating in that way, then, you know, maybe we can imagine that the Supreme is formless, because matter has form. Now we see this material world, and that has form. And that is the general thought is that, okay, if matter has form, then anything spiritual must be formless, because it's not matter. So when we continue in that way, when we continue in that material illusion, we remain in ignorance that way. You know, we have to understand things through Shastra. Like Srila Prabhupada explains another purport in Canto 5, Chapter 1, Verse 12, he says that anything created by Krishna, it cannot be false. So everything, you know, both spiritual and material, it cannot be false. But trying to use it for our enjoyment, that is false. No? Krishna, it's Bhaktram Yakitapa Samsavaloka Maheshwaram, that he's the enjoyer, and we use it to serve him. So the fact that we want to use this material energy and to serve ourselves, that is false. But that does not make the material energy false. So when we look at the purport for today, Prabhupada says here that one thing may be permanent and another may be temporary. But both the permanent and the temporary, there are facts. And he explains that, you know, if I become angry, then, it's temporary. You know, I stop being angry after a few minutes. But that anger is temporary, but it's still very real. And I was thinking it's like, character acting. And, you can take on, an actor, he goes and he takes on the clothes of another person, and he goes into the personality of another person, and he can completely act that other person, and he can be a murderer, he can be a psychopath, he can be anything on stage. But then when he gets off the stage, then he goes back to the other actor. But, that doesn't make the theater play false. It doesn't, even he might act a person that once existed. So that doesn't make it false, just because, it's there. It's like we have these constellations. I don't know if any of you have ever joined in the constellations that we do. And, you're in a constellation and you take on the nature, the thoughts, the feelings of another person. And that is very, very, very real. Try and step out of it sometimes. It's not that easy. But then, at some point we sit down and we talk about it, and then it's not there anymore. We're back to our own person. So things might be temporary, but they're definitely not false. So I said I was reading this dialectic spiritualism, and I was just not really reading it. I was scanning through like the different philosophies that people have, and I realized that, and this is a little bit of a duh statement. I realized that the more God is in the center, the more sense their philosophies make. It's also when you look, Prabhupada had less to say about it. Prabhupada was agreeing with them. And so the more God is in the center, the more sense their philosophies made. And as soon as God was not there, then their philosophies became much more complicated. It's like, it becomes like different blind people, and you know the story of the different blind people, and they try and feed an elephant and make up what the elephant looks like. No, and the one thinks that an elephant is a very long tube, and the other one thinks it's a tree trunk because he's holding his legs. It's, you can't make up the entire elephant, when you're a blind person and you're just feeling one part of the elephant. So it becomes a little bit like that. They're blind people and they're trying to understand this huge creation, and, it makes no sense. Like one of the philosophies, it's said that the soul starts at birth and then at death, it becomes eternal. And Srila Prabhupada said, like he explained there, a soul cannot become eternal. You're not that, you start at some point and then from there on you become eternal. You either are eternal or you're not eternal. You can't become eternal. Yeah, it made no sense. So this purport also, Srila Prabhupada, let me see if I can find it. In other words, the energy of the Supreme Lord is permanent as the Lord himself, although his energy is sometimes manifest and sometimes not. And that makes it very clear. So yeah, the poor philosopher didn't have the benefit of this purport when he came up with that really strange idea. I think it comes from our wanting to, because we are, as a soul, we are eternal. So we want to become eternal. We want to be that eternality is there. So then, you know, we come in this body and we try and make up all different ways to kind of accommodate that eternality that we have within us. But then without absolute knowledge, then, yeah, you come up with some very strange things. And so reading all this and kind of realizing how important it is to kind of have that knowledge of God and have the spiritual master giving you the way, I was, you know, I went to the cows yesterday and I had to do something and they were a little bit difficult, and then, you know, I'm their mother, so they always listen to me, so I just had to go, and then they kind of look at me and they go, okay. So, and that's, you know, I realized how simple it is actually, you know, how if we just follow the master, you know, our spiritual master Krishna, and we listen to his explanations, and that makes everything simple. Like, just like yesterday, you know, all the complications with cows running around and trying to do their own thing and me wanting them to do something else. It became very simple when they realized, you know, she knows. She's the one who gives us food. She's the one who's always been here, so she knows what is good for us, so we just do what she says. And then everything became very simple. Yes, so when we listen to the spiritual master in Krishna, then this whole creation, this whole complicated creation, becomes very, very, very simple. And in that way, you know, our life can become perfect. Srila Prabhupada also says in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 1 and Verse 38, in a purport he kind of refers to Ambarish Maharaj. He says that if we believe Brahman is the real truth, we have to place the lotus feet of Krishna in our heart, just like Maharaj Ambarish. Sarva Krishna Padara Vindayur, he always engaged everything in the service of Krishna. And so we do a little test here, if you know what he did with all his different senses. What did he do with his mind? He meditated on his lotus feet. His words. His hands, somebody else. He knows everything. What did he do with his hands, Maharaj Ambarish? Yes. His ears. It's a simple one. Yes. His eyes. Sorry? The deity and the temples. You see, kind of. He's used his eyes to see the deities and the temples. His sense of touch. This is a nice one. Yes. His sense of smell. Yes, tulasi. That's what it says. He probably also smelled the flowers, but it says tulasi leaves, which are offered to the Lord. His tongue. This is a no-brainer. His legs. Holy places, but yes, the temple is a holy place. His head, we do it every day. Yes. His desires. This is what we should be doing. Our desires should be? Yeah, serve Krishna 24 hours a day. So, yes, so when we can be like that, then I think, you know, this whole material universe just becomes incredibly simple. It's like, it's explained and, you know, it becomes this this ocean of material suffering, it becomes like the water in the hoofprint of a calf, and we can just so easily cross beyond it. So we can think like Maharaj Ambarish, and you know, we can engage all our senses in Krishna's service, then yeah, this whole world becomes incredibly simple, and we don't even have to worry about it anymore. It's just, you know, we're just so busy. If you think about serving Krishna 24 hours a day, we don't really have time anymore to think about the complications of this material world, so then this whole class isn't necessary anymore. And as usual, I'm very, very early. I think I speak too quickly. So, are there any questions or comments? You're not allowed to guess which part of the class I am at and the rest, which part came from Yadurani and Kanchanavali. Yes?
You mentioned about understanding the philosophers, that was recording. In the first few years of college, I had one teacher for Western philosophy that was really simply involved. And he was a scholar. But he was also very ancient Christian conscious, very favorable to Christian conscience. I'm not sure I remember, he was a very small man. But I wasn't at the classes, but I listened to the recordings later. And as he goes to each philosopher, this is Jayabhaja Manifest in the college at the time, and she makes a few comments. This permanent silence of the devotees, you hear from the tape, the devotees are just so confused. Because he was really scotty, really going into it. They had his permanent sense of confusion. The question was always the voice was saying, "I can't understand it, I can't understand it." And at one point he says, he gets exasperated himself, he goes, "You're not meant to understand it. It's not understandable. You just have to know about it." And it was kind of really funny, and he kind of said, "It doesn't make sense, it's not meant to make sense, because and that's what you have to understand, so it doesn't make sense." So I'm not sure he went on to say they follow Stephen. But he kind of himself, he was kind of, I'm not sure he realized it before being a scholar, and I'm telling the world to sit there and go, this doesn't make sense, I can't understand.
I think it's a little bit like, I think it was Jamashtami who gave the class the other day, and he was explaining how like science, I don't know certainly if it was him, that you know there's science, you know, a new scientist, no, sorry, it was a class that I heard. Yesterday, and it was explained that every scientist, you know, they have a theory, you know, as for instance about the origin of the universe, and then as long as this generation of scientists is there, then everybody goes with that theory, and then the next generation of scientists comes and they kind of throw out the old theory and they come up with a whole new theory, and then it lasts for the generation of those scientists because they can't accommodate anything new, and then a whole new theory comes and they throw the old one out. You know, we see that especially with the origin of the universe, it's kind of, you know, it changes every so many decennia. And I think with philosophy also it's the same. You know, somebody comes with something and it takes some time, and then because I saw that the main, you know, if you look at the dialectic spiritualism, there's often quite some time between the philosophers. It takes some time, and then people get it out of the system and they realize it was completely nonsensical, and then they come up with something else. But yeah, it makes no sense. But then after, you know, we've digested that philosophy and then a new philosopher comes, then we realize actually it did make no sense. But we have to wait, they have to wait for some new philosophy to figure that one out. So it works a little bit like with science. It's kind of, there's the philosophy of the age. I know, I remember I studied Hegel at school. I had a communist as a history teacher. So we learned everything about Hegel and Marx and Lenin. And you know, Hegel, you know, for some time everything had to do with Hegel. And that's where Marxism came from, it was based on Hegel. And then, you know, after some time we threw that out because we realized that, you know, but there was like a whole period in everything, and everything was Hegel. So we have those periods. So yes, Paul.
That's what bothers the scientist about us. Our philosophy internally did not change. It's a big thing, but we just, you know, stuck in our ways and we won't seek the truth because it should change. And that's exactly what they criticize us for.
So as if the truth changes.
As a scientist, we are very open-minded and we change because they've been wrong before. And they couldn't understand why we said the same thing.
Yeah, it's like today 1 + 1 = 2, but then tomorrow it could be 3.
Exactly.
It's, you know, 1 + 1 = always 2, and it's not going to change just because, you know, it will always be 2.
The goal is to change.
Sorry?
The goal is to change, it's not the truth.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, otherwise they would be out of a job.
Yeah.
You know, if the first scientist would have figured out where the universe came from, then any scientist after him would be out of a job, so they have to come up with something new, so...
Yeah, just remember until you comment that. Oh, but explain that a philosopher has to destroy the philosopher, otherwise he's not a philosopher.
Yeah. Yeah, well, what is the use if you say the same thing? So then, you know, again, there's no real reason for your existence. So you have to come up with something new. Yes?
In the light of this comment, you're not meant to understand this philosophy. My question is a little bit out of date, but at the beginning of the verse, it was mentioned that was it insects or some other small creatures?
Perspirations. I am sure there's a way of looking at it. It's like also explained that like trees are born from the soil.
Yeah.
Now, you know, there's the Vedic way of looking at things and our Western way of looking at things. And I take the discrepancy to be there, and since I don't have, you know, I don't possess the Vedic way of seeing things, I just accept it. I mean, you have like, okay, when we perspire, for instance, then, you know, that's germs multiplying at that point. You know, that's why, you know, people that perspire the whole day, in the evening, they smell bad, and then you shower. So I think that's where, that's how that is linked. The same thing as, you know, we put seeds in the ground and trees come from there. Basically, the ground becomes the womb. So I think maybe it's, I don't know if that's my understanding of it. Like a seed in the ground becomes the womb. So the same thing with perspiration, it becomes like the womb. Like the baby is born from our womb. Ultimately, the baby is also born from an egg, but it's born from our womb. So in that sense, the perspiration becomes the womb of bacteria.
As you mentioned that trees come from earth, it's one of the tenets of the knowledge that Mother Earth is also it's the mother, or Earth is one of the mothers. And also, Mahavishnu lies in the present ocean, the universe has come out of this course of the steam, so that's also similar.
Well, at the time of King Prithu, Mother Earth kept all the seeds. You know, the seeds were in the ground, and she didn't let them go. She kept them because there was no more sacrifices. There was, you know, she was being abused, so she just kept all the seeds. And we can see that now, that more and more people abuse, then big parts of the earth become infertile. Now, we attribute that to different material causes, but ultimately, it's Mother Earth who kind of withholds. Because we abuse her, so she withholds it. And if you treat her well, then she can give that again. Yes, ma'am. I said that you have to.
Well, it's basically my question, is anything false? Is anything false?
If Prabhupada says nothing is false, I think it's our perception of something being false. But I think that in principle, if false, I think Prabhupada means with false, he means non-existent. Like not real, or not real. There's like, you know, there's the not real as in non-existent. So that is the way I understand that. I mean, there's falsity. I mean, there's truth and there's untruth. So in that sense, there's things which are false, but as in things are not real, as in non-existent.
I think it's false, but my way is saying that this universe is false.
but that means not existent, doesn't it? That I understand it as meaning like it doesn't have any real existence, permanent existence. Yeah, that's how I understand it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think what I would use is like in the class, it's a nice point, but it's probably it's quite strong. Nothing exists as false except for identification with us of lack of joy.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, but then but that yes, that's false, but then that's also that's
Anything else? Okay.